Welcome to the EDUCAUSE podcast. This podcast is sponsored by Moran Technology Consulting, providing management and IT consulting services to higher education institutions around the world. MoranTechnology.com. I'm Jerry Bain for EDUCAUSE, and on this podcast, we feature a keynote session from the 2011 EDUCAUSE Enterprise and Information Technology Conference. It's a CIO panel, including Mark Askren, Chief Information Officer for the University of Nebraska, Lincoln. Clara Jelenkova, Associate Vice President and CITO for the University of Chicago. Kevin Maroney, Vice Provost for Information Technology and CIO for the Pennsylvania State University. David Swartz, CIO and Assistant Vice President for American University. And Brad Wheeler, Vice President for Information Technology, CIO, and Dean at Indiana University. The presentation is entitled Major Challenges Facing IT Leaders.
What we're going to do is we're going to start out with a question for everyone, and we'd like to keep the answers as strategic as possible. We'll keep it to about 3 minutes so we can to get through all of them, okay? So I want to start out with the first question for the panel that we want to get into. The cost of implementing enterprise systems in a higher education environment obviously are substantial. Most of us have been through that. Some institutions have been looking lately for best of breed component alternatives in order to have better control over their own destiny. Where do you think enterprise systems are heading, and functionally and economically in the future? So we'll start with Kim and we'll go this way.
My voice doesn't carry at all, so I just have to do a quick AV check. So Qualy loves best of breed. Given that today Qualy is earlier in the product roadmap, we think best of breed is an amazing, genius idea. We would suggest starting with your financial system in an evaluation of best of breed. But when I look at where I think the challenge that we collectively have to solve around the economic models of our ERP systems, there is certainly opportunity to start to view some of the more modular components that we can pull into our administrative systems, especially with more service-oriented architecture. From an economic model, though, there is a difference in the environment that we are in today than where we've been, where we were 5 years ago, even more so probably 10 years ago, which is, if I'm making a business case to innovate within the ERP offering, the core offering, so not add-on solutions, but innovate within the core. Basically, once you've completed the implementation of your ERP, the dollars that go, you have your maintenance stream. So you continue to make maintenance payments. And we've been in an environment where there was so much new adoption of an ERP that if I'm making the business case to add new functionality and you're already on maintenance, I'm really making that business case based on the fact that if I add this functionality to my system, I can sell new customers that I couldn't sell within that functionality. So as I'm calculating that business case and making the case for that investment, I'm drawing in new revenue. I'm not trying to fund that kind of innovation out of the maintenance stream. And because you're already on maintenance, then I'll toss that innovation into your solution, and you're really getting all of that as a part of maintenance. And because of the rapid adoption of ERP systems implementation of new ERP systems, this kind of ERP administrative market in higher education has become relatively saturated. And so I think we collectively have a problem to solve that is, from whence do we fund innovation? The concept that the vendor community can fund innovation through maintenance dollars is really not a realistic assumption. The maintenance dollars can, with the changes in regulations and legislation, that all needs to be carried through in the maintenance dollars, with the support that comes with maintenance dollars, with some ongoing defects fixes and some small functional improvements. That can all come through the maintenance stream. But, when we look at economic changes in this environment, I think that this question of where did the economics of innovation come from? And what role does the higher education community play in driving that innovation? And what role does the commercial environment play in driving that innovation? It is a different economic environment than we've been in the past. And, the Qualy community would say that a key component of this shift is, as we've heard numerous times from some of the other open source and community source presentations, that we need to be collectively better at collaborating around innovation, and I would underscore that, saying that is not saying you need to be collectively better, but we need to be collectively better at finding creative ways to fund innovation so that all of education gets the greatest benefit from that kind of innovation.
Would you like to take it now, Dave? Tell us the, Mark, tell us the approach from DataTel.
So at DataTel, we're a little bit different. I would say we take more of a practical or pragmatic approach. Our clients tend to be predominantly two-year institutions or smaller liberal arts colleges, so we have less resources in many cases to apply to building conglomerations of best of breeds with integration needs, et cetera. We try to do things that we think are smart and practical. For example, we don't have our own LMS. I don't think many of us do. But we try to have tightly coupled integration with an LMS and support a variety of those so you can pick the best one suited to your needs. And you have fairly tightly integrated functionality. The place that we're seeing the biggest opportunity to add value today is really in the maturation of the core functionality, actually delivering on the promise of ERP that we sold you many, many years ago. If you look at what's there, you've got the core modules. They're relatively mature. Ours can always be better. We can build more under HR, more under finance. But we've also added things like a portal that sits over top, as have all of us. We have a mobile layer now that accesses things all across the systems. We have a reporting layer on top of all that that hopefully gives you insights into what's happening on your campus. We think the further deepening of of that functionality, exposing more of the pieces that are in your systems, whether they come from the ERP side or the LMS side, really is the greatest place to innovate given this particular set of circumstances, tough economic times, a real shift in focus on accountability and less on access in many cases. So we think there's tremendous opportunity to innovate. We pick up the right pieces as we go. If we can build our own and that makes sense, we do it if it's really strategic. If it's something that's not as strategic or we can't possibly build something that will keep pace, we partner and bring that into the ecosystem and try to tightly couple it. So practical, pragmatic, doing the things that matter to you on campus, surfacing the right data, partnering with others who have best-of-breed solutions where possible and where practical. That's generally our approach.
This is Dave Becker. Would you like to go ahead and give us a SunGuard side?
SunGuard side. Can you hear me okay? So first off, thanks for having us all here. This is quite an opportunity. Really excited to have a chance to talk in front of you. This is just like every Saturday night we all get together and have this kind of conversation. So.
Where's the wine?
Right, maybe later. I think when you talk about where ERP is going, you need to look at, what customer problems it's really trying to solve. And the customer problems that we had 10 years ago, I think they were really focused around the CIO persona. So the people in this room, you would make a decision for your college, for your university, and you could push that ERP decision across most of the organizations in your university or college. Except for maybe the advancement office, pretty much you could roll that out and everybody would kind of have to follow suit. Now I think the dynamics have changed quite a bit because there is more specialization. You have your own customers and those customers increasingly more and more are making their own decisions and you're kind of, I don't know if I want to say forced, but you need to support those decisions. I'm sure you've had many discussions around mobile and how the community is dictating what you do with mobile. Same thing here. I have a horrible metaphor I'm going to bring up, but just to try to keep it lively, I thought I'd talk about. I was at my parents' place for Easter recently, and I don't know if you go back to your family at all, but they have a couple rooms where stuff seems to accumulate, and it's the garage, it's the basement, and it seems to be like one of those hoarding situations. You ever see that show Hoarders at all? Well, this is weird because it's all my stuff. I don't know where it comes from, but the hoarding situation gets bigger and bigger. And I noticed that I saw one of my old bikes there. And I remember back to my first bike and how when you had your first bike, you just didn't do anything with it, right? You got it, you rode it, you were fine with it. And I think for many people, that was the norm. Now when you buy a bike or you've used it for a little while, you kind of specialize with it, right? Maybe you put on a different set of tires, maybe you put on different pedals, shifters. And I think the same thing is going on with ERP, which is you need a healthy, sturdy frame. But for many people, you are now being forced to specialize in certain areas. We're seeing that in admissions. We're seeing it in continuing education. We're seeing it in research, where schools want to make decisions that are focused on kind of their best practices, and they want to have flexibility in how they expand their digital campus. So from SunGard Higher Education's perspective, we've really been focused over the last 2 years in this vision, this concept called the Open Digital Campus. And at the core, it's recognition that we can't do everything for everybody. We have to play nice. We have to have flexibility. We have to participate in open source, community source, third-party products. And that's a really big piece of our strategy. It also is important that we connect with your customers. So, like I said, you're, of course, everybody, all the CIOs in this room, you're our customers, but then you have your own customers. So we've been formalizing the relationships with your customers, your registrars, your controllers, through what we call our customer advisory boards. And those customer advisory boards gives us direct access into what things you need in the next generation ERP. And they've been tremendously valuable. They actually dictate, not dictate, but they help guide us where we're going from an ERP perspective going forward. Of course, we still work with all of you from our pillar group and from the Open Digital Campus and making sure we're kind of adhering to standards that provide flexibility and choice. Because I think at the end of the day, if you have openness, if you have an open system, if you have choice, you have options, it's going to reduce your total cost of ownership. And I think there's a lot of schools out there who, you know, if you're kind of forced down one path, one direction with limited flexibility, limited choice, it's going to hurt your total cost of ownership. And ultimately, right now, with the budget constraints that you're under, the pressures that you're facing, that's really what's kind of, I'm sure, eating at you day in and day out. So we hope to fix that.
Thank you, Dave. Okay, Mark. Would you like to give us the Oracle side?
Sure, I'd be happy to. Can you guys hear me okay? All right. So, you know, the concept of best of breed, I think, is attractive for a number of factors, but at the end of the day, we feel that it should be closely aligned with what you think your competitive differentiators are. And frankly, that applies whether you're talking about ERP or any system that you're acquiring. So, the good thing is that interoperability really is more pervasive now than it ever has been, significantly so. And that's been driven by standards adoptions, by, you know, everyone represented up here, as well as, you know, your customer demand from you all. So when we look out over the next 5 to 8 years, you know, we see some key drivers around functionality in the economy. That we're using as sort of the touchstones for how we consider how we're building out the product to react to that. So one of them is, you know, for example, this explosive growth of non-traditional students, you know, the part-time student, the older student, the student that wants a relationship with your institution actually more like a bank or a service. They don't care about athletics. They're focused on quality and cost. They don't care, you know, about what the traditional students do. By some estimates, that makes up 70% of the population currently engaged in higher education today. And a lot of discussion, frankly, is still around the other 30%. The relationship that you all have with government is also changing, and we need to understand what that means. So, you know, the growth in higher education is over. The post-World War II GI Bill funding that built a system that's the envy of the world, and it still is shifting. A lot of that shift is going to go to healthcare. But the perspective is this is a mature industry. There's a demand, external demand as well as internal, for accountability, for transparency, for efficiency. We're all still dealing with a knowledge economy, but that's also shifted from high demand for just-in-time, not just-in-case education. And so there's sort of an underlying theme of needing flexible systems and the shift from credits to competencies there's a steady march going on that we think at some point will actually have some regulatory teeth in it. And I think the there's a general sort of disintermediation of and fraying almost of the mission. So there's, you know, some people refer to it as the piranha economy, where it's always taking little bites around the edges, and before you know it, you're in trouble. Competition from either private universities or even the corporate sector that have proven, they have methods now that have proven to be extremely effective, particularly in educating these non-traditional students that are going to take their money wherever they're getting the best result. Less research funding over the long haul. And finally, I'd say global competition the co-opetition is front and center. And I think most, what I've heard even walking around this conference is everybody has a global strategy either in place or they're building one, which I think is absolutely the right thing to do. So I think when we look at what that means, at least at a high level from a product standpoint, there is a commodification going on of some of the underlying services. Now, the good thing is that commodification actually drives more interoperability. If you standardize more, then it's easier to plug and play and decide those key systems that you want to either take control of yourself or come out of an open source dynamic, something that, you know, at least some of the big vendors up here are simply not going to build, the high specialization. So that business process standardization is something that is starting to get legs, and we're starting to have real discussions, certainly across my customer base, but even here within the vendor community. A couple weeks ago, I was at PESC. We're a big supporter of the standards bodies, and we had a very interesting discussion that included Oracle, SunGard, Datatel, Qawali, Red Lantern, about forming a student systems interoperability standards group. So at least as we look at the next generation system, what should those underlying models be about calculating tuition, enrolling a student, cutting a bill to bring down the cost overall? The other one, as I mentioned, is flexibility around non-traditional models and the support for those. We see sort of longer term a bifurcation of some of the population going into hosted or subscription-based models versus on-premise, driven largely by the economic model being either something you're forced into or something you see competitive advantage over. And attached to that is the advent of shared services models where larger institutions may offer to host or come in and not only host the hardware, but potentially even have the business office merge with the smaller institutions, have one single HR entity that can service multiple campuses. And I think the idea of having operations being able to merge and be flexible is going to be a lot more valuable, a lot more, you know, sort of current moving forward. And then finally, I'd say the boundaries around higher education have always been very flexible, but they're even more porous now in terms of extending beyond the traditional mission. And by that, I mean you're being tasked to track and to understand and to interoperate now with K through 12 or P through 12 within the larger community, even off into the workforce. How are the students you're educating doing in the workforce? Why are they leaving the state? Where are they going? What are they doing? Those mandates you're already grappling with now. And so that gives rise to a whole nother sort of set of challenges and opportunities, you know, on the product side for things like around master data management, identity management. How do we maintain that unduplicated count over time and make sure that these people we have these lifelong relationships with can log in from anywhere at any given time and be provisioned and get the services that they're going to expect from you all. So that's I think I probably said enough, and I'll kick it over to you, Sherry.
Thanks, Mark. Sherry, go ahead and give us the SAP side.
All right. Well, I'll start maybe a little bit from the top with what we're bringing strategy to all of our applications, including our higher education customers. And really, sort of in a nutshell, we want to provide applications on-premise, on-demand, and on-device with what we call orchestration. Because we believe we're in a transformation, an industry transformation, again, that many of us have been through several times. And that what we're going to see over the next 5 years really are our customers operating in a hybrid environment. So you'll have a combination of on-premise solutions. You'll have lots of choice for SaaS-based or cloud solutions. The mobile explosion is here. There'll be mobile applications. And what we mean when we say with orchestration is as SAP delivers these solutions, we will keep the data and the business process orchestrated across wherever the origin of the transaction is. So if you have an origin on a mobile device that goes through a SaaS solution that then ultimately winds up in an on-premise solution, that data and that business process will be orchestrated and integrated. The second key point that we are working on that we think is critically important to infrastructure cost and cost of implementations, et cetera, is in-memory and columnar database computing. So we are committed to, today we are delivering in-memory computing. In the near term, we're starting with our analytics solutions. In the midterm, we will add simulation forecasting kinds of capabilities to in-memory computing. And in the longer term, we'll bring all of our applications on an in-memory infrastructure layer. And that has significant cost management advantages for the technology in the future. We are deploying SaaS solutions today. We are deploying cloud solutions today. But again, we think we're going to see a hybrid environment there for quite some time, which comes back to the best of breed. We're committed to open deployment options, which means continued choice in things like database, hardware, infrastructure. And so you'll have continued choice from SAP and those kinds of options as well. And then also a few years ago, in response to our customers, in upgrade considerations and the cost of upgrades, implementations, et cetera, we also executed on a strategy that we call innovation without disruption. And that is to deliver functional innovation, technological innovation on a stable core. And so we started a strategy of delivering enhancement packages, which are cumulative over time, basically. What this allows you to do is select features or functions that you want at whatever time you're ready for them without going through these major upgrade processes and disrupting complete infrastructure. So we've been working on several of those kinds of strategies from a perspective of the technology. And then as we look at functionality and those kinds of capabilities, we certainly continue to enhance our applications for higher education. Now we are doing a lot in the world of analytics. Some of you may know we acquired SAP Business Objects several years ago. So we would say it's not about ERP anymore. It's about so much more. And so we have a lot going on in analytics and what we call prepackaged analytics. An example of that is we're working on a solution today for research administration. These are pre-configurations, prepackaged solutions within a business intelligence capability. We're also working on mobile solutions. And so there's an awful lot going on within the industry, within our industry and with yours. But we think within the next 5 to 10 years that this major transformation requires some kind of thinking about that broader strategy.
Good. Thank you very much, Sherry. Mm-hmm. I'd like to thank the panel for their question or answers to the first question. I'm going to set the second question a little bit, and we're going to go through the same order. ROI, return on investment on ERP, is very difficult. It's almost a fool's errand to try to calculate ROI. It's hard enough to calculate the total cost of ownership. It's more like, you know, the sewers, the water, the power, the buildings. You know, it's very difficult. But given that that's a situation that is very difficult to talk about the return on investment of an enterprise system, I'm going to ask the panelists to talk about what enhancements or additions that they see coming down the road that they intend to implement or have implemented recently that will help improve that value equation for higher education. Where are they adding value to the systems that are already installed so that though you can't calculate the ROI on the whole system, you can certainly see what some of those innovations are doing for the users. So I'm going to put Kim a little bit of a bad position here trying to speak for the whole Qualy consortium, so to speak. But if you'll take a shot at it, we'd appreciate it.
Yeah, one of these things is not like the others. So, I had a meeting a couple of years back at EDUCAUSE with a major higher education technology vendor that is not on the stage. And through the course of the meeting, I was there to talk to them about their strategy in working with Qualy. And they kept saying, well, we talked to Qualy, and Qualy said this, and we tried to create a partnership, but Qualy wasn't really. And midway through the meeting, I was like, who is this Qualy? I have not met Qualy. And so it is one of the challenges. You know, we've heard a lot about the benefits of Qualy, and there is a different way of engaging in the Qualy community and with the Qualy products or projects overall. And it does put more responsibility on the institutional decision makers, and I would say more responsibility on understanding the institution's strategy and objectives, and then engaging with the community to understand how to align what Qualy has to offer and has to bring to that to optimize for those strategy and objectives. So it is much less of a concrete offering or approach that is relatively similar for each institution. And so, you know, if ever, I don't believe that, I think Brad had to catch a plane, but, you know, if ever he says to you, you know, you can do this because Indiana's done this, just, I want to say, you know, smack him, but maybe walk away. Walk away is probably better guidance. Call him on that. Call him on that. Anyone in this room who has a $100 million a year IT budget can do exactly what Brad does. And for everyone else, you know, there are a range of different ways. So when I look at the functionality and capability that is most core to Qualys' maturity to be able to do that effectively, and cost is critical. You know, there are institutions who are engaged in the Qualys community who are really looking to find the lowest total cost of ownership for the systems that they're implementing. Stevens Institute is one of those. It's just is just live on the Qualys financial system, SaaS environment hosted with R-Smart. Very focused implementation. I was doing a case study with them and really tried to get the CIO to talk through with me, or the CFO, I think it was, talk through with me. I was trying to draw something out that was some beautiful soundbite about the TCO savings. And he was really vague. And I said, well, you know, did you really do an analysis and look at, you know, what would it cost you to implement the other systems? And what was it going to cost you to implement KFS? And he said, well, there was no license cost, and the services and maintenance were lower. So I didn't have to sharpen my pencil a lot on this one. I was like, okay, so he's not going to give me a good, you know, neat little numbers that I can line up. But, you know, if institutions are looking to optimize for total cost of ownership, then the commercial ecosystem around Qualys is critical. Because that allows an institution to say, you know, we want to be innovators in this area. And we're going to put our scarce resources towards the innovations that matter most to us. And we will leverage commercial resources to do services or support or hosting or whatever that might be, or development, customizations. But, you know, having that commercial ecosystem around Qualys is really critical to providing that functionality, what that capability. And what that provides is opportunities for institutions to come together. 10 institutions came together and said, we really need a very comprehensive travel and entertainment module. We have, you know, we've come together. We've defined what we want this to do. We will pool our dollars. It's about $1 million development project. We'll all kick in money. We will hire R-Smart to do the development with the requirement that this is all contributed back to the community so that anyone who comes behind us gets it at no cost. That license, that functionality is available to all. So that's a model. There's another model where Michigan State University really needed a materials development module, a materials management module, and it was critical to their go live. And this is probably not the way Bruce would characterize it, but I will say there wasn't time to collaborate. So they developed a module. And then they've worked across the community and collaborated to bring that back into the community so that everyone else gets the benefit from that. The endowment management module that's in Qualys, I would say, and I think those in the endowment management community would validate, is a best-in-class solution. The Qualys COEUS research solution that Brad talked about, that I think we'll see significant implementation next year, is a critical system for institutions that are depending more and more on sponsored research to help fund education through this economic cycle. And so, you know, that kind of collaboration and this commercial ecosystem around Qualys is really driving the total cost of ownership and that side of ROI.
Okay, thank you very much, Kim. So Mark, you want to tell us about a couple of hot things that Data tells us?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, first of all, give me a second to get my mic spun up. I want to apologize. I was using the Midwestern three-minute rule, not the longer-form East Coast three-minute rule, so I'm going to modify and try to be a bit more in-depth. So I think ROI is an interesting topic that you can really drill into and start talking with numbers. I think it's easy to say it's hard to quantify, TCO is hard to pin down. I think if you really focus on what your clients are driving at, and again, in our world, it's very different worlds. For a four-year private liberal arts, it tends to be a couple of simple things. Revenue, which is recruitment, retain them, and then reconnect or request, depending on how jaded you are, get some, you know, contributions back in. That is the major focus of a lot of our four-year clients. That's the world they're in today, right? I think if you build products that address those needs and you really focus on the ROI, so have a baseline, understand what they've been doing, have a product that meets that need and be able to quantify that with at least reasonable assumptions, I think you can have a meaningful ROI conversation because you're focused on the area that's most important to them and their current need. On the two-year, on the community college side, it's a much different story for us. It's all about doing more with less. It's about operational efficiency. It's about taking the pieces they've already invested in and making those work better. It's about simplifying, not complicating. Give us best practices. Help us get to a baseline that lowers our need to customize and keep things on a different track. We've got a ton of products. We all have a ton of products. We have more products than our clients can probably consume. I sat now with a dozen of our clients out in Chicago, suburban Chicago, last week, and for an hour and a half they said, enough products. You've got plenty of products. Actually help us really make better use of these. Again, reporting. Show us things that we don't know today. Voluntary framework for accountability, a new set of measurements that have been defined by that community. Help us come up with a dashboard for VFA. Half of those pilot clients are DataTel clients. Give us a dashboard. We can punch a button, see how we do, upload that somewhere, maybe to AAC, look at how our peers are doing, and actually learn from them and get a best practice baseline from a repository. That's what our clients want. That's how they want to deal with ROI, with real concrete solutions that work well. They care less about the dollars and cents in many cases. They care more about, is it doing something that I need? Is it working well? Is it simple enough that I can teach somebody how to maintain it and keep going? You know, slow down almost the product innovation. You've got all the basics. Make sure those work really well, and make sure you can tell me why I should invest in these and why I should maintain these. Keep it simple and make it work. And that really has been the repeated conversation I've had everywhere I've gone, whether four-year, two-year, depending on their needs, depending on their focus area. Keep it simple, make it work, and help us understand ROI with believable assumptions.
Good. Thank you.
Dave?
Yeah, I have to say that I actually agree with a lot of what Mark just said.
I think when my mic not on for that. I think when you're looking at ROI, you look at obviously the cost aspect of it. There's the upfront cost, but then there's the ongoing maintenance cost. And the ongoing maintenance cost is the big piece of cost that's out there. Kind of keying off of one of the articles that Ron's written around changing dynamics in student information systems, there's three components there that I think really play into that ROI factor. First is the upgrade path that you have to go through for maintaining these systems going forward. Frankly, over the last 5 years, SunGard in some areas has struggled with that because it's a lot of effort and a big impact on ROI if you have to kind of do that lift and replace for the entire system all at once. So just like many of the other vendors, we're going to that kind of point release solution where you can implement pieces of functionality that will dramatically lower your ROI. Being able to implement those components and migrate them forward on your schedule is a big piece of lowering that ROI. The other piece is also interoperability and building in, for example, RESTful interfaces into the system so that as you do those migrations, as you do those upgrades, obviously they don't impact and break other things, which is a really big piece of it. There's other areas out there. I think when we're looking at mobile, for example, I mean, I'm sure you guys have been talking a lot about mobile and what you can do there and how you look at the ROI for mobile. I think in some ways it's almost foolish to think that you can do everything on mobile on your own. We've released at SunGard a mobile framework that helps set the stage, and a big piece of that framework is understanding that because we're in higher education, one school doesn't have to do it alone. It is very much community source driven, which is the mobile environment changes on a monthly basis. And so to think that one school can kind of pull that all together is kind of extremely aggressive. So we've actually launched a code repository where schools can contribute mobile apps. And I think, that's obviously, that's all free, so there's no better ROI than something that starts off free. But the maintenance of those mobile apps is driven by the community. So, you know, you're not working with Walmart and Target here. This is higher education. We share things. So I think it was Kim who said earlier that, you know, we have to do a better job of inspiring the community to share this type of information. When we look at ROI, we really take that seriously at SunGard. Community source is a really big piece of our strategy. Over the last year since we announced that, we've actually had 116 contributions into community source, 12 of which we've actually brought into baseline. And what that goes to, again, is reducing that maintenance burden that you have for those modifications on your campus, trying to get to some sort of shared responsibility where your ROI is actually shared across the community. So, I mean, as far as when you're talking about the costs, I think how the community, how higher education can work together is a really big piece of the answer when you're actually talking about how do you get a better ROI, not just measuring it.
Good. Thank you. Mark, you're up.
Okay. And, yeah, I think I'm going to tee off what's been said largely, but, I think there's some, potentially some surrogates for ROI if you can't calculate it specifically. Competitive differentiation is one that I already mentioned. I think there's also predictability. Are my costs predictable? Are certain outcomes predictable? And there's risk mitigation, and that can be fairly tactical, such as, do you deliver your regulatory patches in a timely manner? All the way up to, well, I've made this investment in this technology and these products, so I, what does the 5 to 7 year roadmap look like? What is, what is the investment profile of the company I'm working with, and what kind of products are going to manifest themselves down the road? So I think that is something that we keep front and center, be it, in the short term where we work closely with our own user community, our 20,000 plus member higher ed user group, to vet out tactical enhancements that are deeply reviewed by customers and release them in a sort of a continuous model. But I think we've also started looking at what the next generation product needs to do and slowly been putting pieces of the new foundation in place. And so our focus over the next, couple, 3 years, to get a little more specific, there's a few things I'd call out. I think I already mentioned the new business model. So support, putting a more flexible enrollment structure within that supports this non-traditional or global business models that are suitable or can be tailored for any of the regions around the globe. We're implementing a componentized and extensible architecture in some of the new things we're building. So assuming that in architecting in your ability to extend these data models and still have them not be customizations, have them fully upgradable, not break, et cetera. We're putting a lot of effort into web services, of course, but really web services that encapsulate a business process. It's not just an interface into the system. We're saying, what does it mean to, in this context, to build a web service enrollment transaction and those pieces of it? And not only is this the foundation of the applications that we're building, but these are the same things that we release to customers and partners. And so those partners are starting to pick those web services up and build mobile applications, frankly, faster than we are, because we're still doing we're focusing on some of the really complex plumbing in the background. And related to that are standards adoptions and plus contributions. My team contributes a lot to PESC and IMS, be it analysis, be it code, be it hours and hours and hours. So we're very serious about standard adoptions, which leads to interoperability, which we sort of talked about before. But, what we try and look at things from a product and a process basis. So if you look at something like ID management, there are things that you can do, and we have done within the higher ed products as a person moves through a student life cycle, for example, and events take place. It can raise events that can be consumed by an ID management system, whether you use an Oracle one or something else. So we can engineer things into the business applications to work to solve some of the biggest problems. And ID management, frankly, I hear more about ID management from you all when I visit than almost anything else in terms of the cost, the complexity, the strategic value of putting ID management in place. And then I guess finally, what my group tries to do is leverage the Oracle portfolio. And it's obviously a very large portfolio. And there's lots of acquisitions, et cetera, and a great majority of which you don't care about and never would care about. But there are some high-value products that we optimize for higher education over time. So whether it's CRM for higher education, whether it's the student warehouse, those are pretty straightforward, but we have content management systems with the connectors from our products. And even larger scale things, as in, I mentioned earlier, but master data management, a person data hub with higher ed extensions that is engineered to manage very, very large volumes of data and aggregate them over time and to cleanse and push that data back out, be it in a campus, be it across a system, be it across a state. So adding that value both short-term as well as building the foundation pieces for the next generation is really what we think, you know, why the customers come to us, and that's what we're focused on.
Thank you very much. Jerry, would you like to go?
Thanks. Well, I think when we look at ROI, there's the traditional calculation, there's the financial calculation, you know, what is the cost of license and service and maintenance for X period of time? And we've all been through those kinds of calculations. Part of, as I mentioned earlier, what we've done to help our customers with that are some of these innovations like innovation without disruption, the enhancement package strategy. We do publish our application roadmaps for each application roadmap out to our customers. Some of the main areas that we're working in across solutions like financials, HR, student, fundraising, are embedded analytics. Again, this concept that real-time analytics is critical to the management of a business, to the business owners of a business. So when you look at some of the things that you've had to do in the past, like building big data warehouses, data marts, et cetera, before you can deliver that capability to your end users, those are the kinds of things that we're innovating around that won't be necessary in the future. But I think there, you know, some other concepts about return on investment that we have a lot of our customers think about, and probably you are too. And these are things like, you know, what is the return to the institution's mission if you can package, if you can receive an application for financial aid, you can calculate the packaging, you can do all of that online, taking abstracts at each step of the way of all of the approvals, and you can actually package and notify a student they've received their financial aid, and most of that activity has taken place outside of office hours. And you can reduce those kind of time frames for those kind of critical processes. Another example of a customer that we had, they were losing an ability to attract international students and the revenue from international students because they couldn't have decisions made because it would go around to a faculty member's desk and it would sit for 3 or 4 weeks at a time before the decisions were being made. They were able to innovate with capabilities they already had from SAP. They innovated again an electronic online process that did 80% of that processing online. They reduced those acceptance decisions by 80%. So I think when you talk about return on investment and you look at your mission, who you're trying to serve, and what they're trying to accomplish, there's a lot of thinking now going into, you know, will I be able to do these kinds of things, roll them out fast, solve a business problem quickly, and can I continue to do that as new requirements come up from my business over time? So those are some of the kinds of things that we're looking at when we talk about return on investment, in addition to some of the technology innovations I spoke of a little bit earlier. Things like in-memory processing, which, you know, eventually if there's no need for a data warehouse anymore, because you can put every transaction in memory and you can have real-time access to it and your users can have real-time ad hoc query, that is enormously powerful, beneficial, and a significant return on investment and cost management.
Thank you very much. Now, I have some questions based on some of the answers some of the folks gave, but I'd like to give the audience an opportunity to ask some questions too. So if anyone would like to ask something now, please, you know, let me know. Raise your hand. Anybody? All right. Well, I'm going to go in and ask a few more questions, and you think about things you may want to find out from these good folks. Okay, question for the panel. There's not anybody in particular. Jump in. Please be respectful of each other, but jump in a bit. Everybody's, to one degree or another, has mentioned mobility. And most of the folks out there I've had conversations with this week or in the last couple of days have all talked about mobility. And so I'd like to ask the panel a little bit about where they see their products heading and what front ends or what mobile strategies they have. And what are some of the risks and benefits of their approach to mobile? So anybody want to start? Right. Jerry, go ahead.
Maybe I'll start with that one since we acquired Sybase. About a year and a half ago, Sybase is considered by some of the analyst reports to be the number one mobile platform. And basically what that means is there are several components to it. There's managing the mobile devices, and there are all kinds of mobile devices out there. They're changing every day. They have to be secure. The data has to be secured. You have to be able to manage them in the event of any kind of an adverse condition. So part of our solution set is about management of the devices themselves. And that can include any kind of student device that a student may bring on. So there's one aspect to it for that. Another aspect to it is really the mobile application development, the rollout and the management of the mobile applications for all of these different devices, the different operating systems. A lot of what's happening today are people are developing an application that's specific for an iPad or it's specific for a RIM device. You have to redevelop that application depending upon the device you want to deploy it on. And our solutions basically are bringing that infrastructure that allows you to develop it once and deploy it across the multiple devices, the multiple operating systems. But I think to part of your question, you know, there's still a great deal of concern about security and those kinds of environments. And everyone has that concern. And I think part of what maybe some of us that do deal in other industries perhaps have additional foresight on. For instance, we deal with the federal government. We deal with the highest level of the security standards. We're constantly keeping up with those kinds of things. So it is a concern. It is, I'd say we're very, very early in the mobile revolution. What I've seen are people sort of experimenting with it at the moment. Sort of they're mobilizing the website. They're mobilizing a few self-service transactions. But there's a great deal more to come.
Anybody else want to add? Okay, Mark, go ahead.
So, again, in the data tell world, in the old days, we used to be like everybody else. We built our own everything. We thought it was great art to go build our own middleware and our own wrappers for everything. And that was sort of what our engineers love to do. We really took a different approach about 5 years ago, which is let's take an agile approach to building the actual products that we send out. Let's just go build something quickly, try to get 80% of the need met and test it and see if our customers want it and we'll actually use it, because we were finding that most of our campuses couldn't consume it fast enough anyway. So we did that for our portal. We built it on top of SharePoint. SharePoint will have a bigger R&D budget forever than poor DataTel will. So we built our stuff on top of it, built the hooks, etc. Same with mobile. We went out, we got a really quick platform to do it. We put 5 or 6 features up, the ones that we thought would be most useful. We put it out in the market, we got feedback. In the meantime, the mobile platform has evolved, 5 times in the last 18 months? So, you know, good for us, we didn't build something deep and heavy that was going to be thrown away. We now are building or modifying and saying, okay, let's take the new frameworks that are basically, you put out an RSS feed and the mobile device for that platform will consume it and spit it out in a form that's appropriate for the phone. We will get much more stuff out faster. We'll learn from the students what they will actually use. And then by the time we actually need to sort of burn it in, it'll be 2 more dev cycles in the mobile world, and we'll have a reasonable proxy for what people want and have a reasonable framework for approaching it. It's real time. It's agile. It's, you know, quit trying to guess and estimate exactly what your clients want. Get something out there that doesn't lock you in. Get something out that's not disruptive to your clients. Be smart about it. Be cost effective about it. Then adapt and modify as you learn more about it.
I think the framework is the key, and I think we're all pretty much saying the same message there. I think how that framework is developed is also important, because you don't want to just use a framework from the commercial side necessarily. You want to make sure that there's extensive higher education involvement. In our case, we work directly with the community to bring that up, and I think that goes back to, again, the community source aspect, which is really important, because those apps are going to change over the time. Whether you have a set of sample apps that work for, you know, today, as soon as you roll them out there, they're going to be outdated. Things are changing so much. We have an app that some student wrote that actually alerts you when a washing machine becomes available, so they know when to go to the laundromat. I mean, these are things that we are not going to be able to, you know, focus IT resources on. Actual students are creating those apps and contributing them to the marketplace. So I think the framework is really important. Make sure it's higher education focused. And then I think how you empower the community, your own on-campus community, is tremendously important. Your students don't want to have the apps pushed out to them specifically just from your university or college. They want to participate in that app generation as well. So how do you empower your students, which is also going to, you know, contribute to a more wired campus?
I would echo that in terms of having the ecosystem out there and leveraging some of the partners that, frankly, at least speaking for Oracle, are more agile and can be more responsive in the short term than we can be around the mobile application market as it currently stands. So, I mean, we have Oracle Mobile ADF. It's the development framework. It's agnostic. We try and build all of the web services that come out of the higher ed products agnostic as well, so that partners can pick it up. A lot of you have developed, there's that great article in Educause recently about developing a framework strategy for a given institution and putting the governance in place around that. And we don't want to get in the way of that. We want to enable that. And so, you know, between the partners and similar to what Dave was saying, releasing through our own community source or the community source site that we host and work with the HUG organization on. And then as these things evolve over time, we can sort of evaluate what it means for the long-term aspects of the business, what is going to survive in terms of the ERP transactions on a mobile platform, and what are those things that we're going to, they're either going to go to a different platform or we're going to find that actually mobile isn't appropriate. It's sort of an interesting project now, but ultimately isn't going to be as ubiquitous across all mobile devices. So it's that having that flexibility and giving customers the ability to experiment, I think, is key.
Yeah, we were having a discussion the other day with a couple of folks, and we were talking about the fact that this is the first time in IT where we're shoving the transactions and the processing out to the people, and they love it. It's not like the old key punch days or anything. You know, we're saying, here's your mobile app. You go do the input. You do the registration. You go check on your own, you know, student bills. You go check on that, and they love it, you know, so... Gartner calls it the consumerization of technology and the death of distance. They want to do everything they can remotely. Kim.
Item to that is, I keep turning my mic on and off because I'm getting feedback. So yell at me if I'm not heard. But UPortal relatively recently, JSIG, the community that is the home to UPortal, relatively recently announced an open source or a collaboration project around mobile. University of Florida, Oxford University, Indiana, and two others, and if you're here and I didn't mention your name, I apologize, are really trying to kind of seed this relatively quickly. I would encourage you to the more we can raise this kind of framework discussion and the sharing of apps and development and experience around this above the vendor level, and, you know, not have what is accessible and available to you be based on the vendor with which you're working, the more quickly we will all learn and evolve and innovate around mobile platforms. And so I think this is a wonderful opportunity to say, how do we work together across this to push this up to a level where all of our efforts benefit all of you?
I'd like to offer the audience another opportunity to ask some questions. There's one over here. If you'd please wait for the mic so everybody could hear the question. That'd be great.
All of the panelists up there need to be working together on some of these solutions, which got me thinking about, do you work together on some of these solutions? So I'd love to hear if there are collaborations that are going on amongst you that we don't know about.
There's certainly, I guess, cooperation was a term that I heard, which I do think exists out there in the marketplace. I mean, ultimately, we are kind of competitive with each other, but I know from what Mark was saying around PESC and IMS standards, that's something that we participate in as well. I think we look for, frankly, the market for the community to kind of drive the standards and to say, hey, we want you guys to establish those interoperability standards and kind of push it back to say, hey, this is a big need for us. I would say with PESC, honestly, I would say there could be even more success there if the community rallied and said, look, we want these vendors to play nicer together. We want to have these standards established within this time frame. I think that, you know, could almost be like something you threw down on the table and say, let's see it. Let's see how committed you are to higher education. Because in a lot of what we're talking about here, it's, you know, we're talking very high-level generic stuff, right? But at the end of the day, you want to make sure you have a committed partner. And you want to make sure that they're going to put some skin in the game. So not just participate in all these boards, but contribute code, contribute the hours, contribute the effort. So, I mean, I would, and I think we're doing that, but probably to a limited degree. There's definitely room for improvement there.
Yeah, and And I think there's we're definitely doing it there, and there's a few more areas that if we could really crack open, I think we could further lower the cost and increase predictability again. And that is, you know, the data exchange standards are fine, but we need to start talking about the business processes behind those and to what degree can those be standardized. Because then you get real business interoperability in a way and at a cost point that's much lower than it is today. And we need you all to adopt the standards. I mean, there's a tired old joke that standards are great, that's why there's so many of them. It's sometimes hard to get customers to adopt the standards that we're putting into the product because it can have an effect on your business process. It can require some investment from a customer standpoint. The long-term payoff, I think, is significant. But Dave's right. You know, the more we can, that's an area that we can collaborate on. We're largely going to respond to your demand on the front end and your willingness to implement them on the back end. And if those are in place, we'll work together.
Yeah, I think the Bologna process and some of the difficulties the EU has had with trying to implement the Bologna process, where everybody basically agrees it's a good idea, but like you said, you joke about the standard, the old joke, Mark, you know, that everybody's got one, you know, and you know, everybody hoped the Bologna process in Europe was going to, you know, do better than it is in the standards. Maybe we can do a little bit better here with interoperability, at least on the SAIS side.
Well, and there's precedent. You know, in some of the regions where we're frankly seeing the most growth, some of the emerging economies, mm-hmm. we have very little discussion and debate about how to use the system. They're either, in some cases, they're just coming from non-automation or they're coming from legacy applications. They want to use the software as it's delivered. And because their perception, and it's accurate, is that it's largely been informed by the best practices of the top universities in the world, those in the United States. But within the community themselves, they realize that if they adopt a common approach to business processes, they can dramatically reduce the cost of implementing and running the software. Even if they don't put in shared services, which some of them are talking about, just the fact that they can have a team that knows how to implement it a certain way and can do it in 25% of the time of some of these traditional implementations. Their competitive differentiator is getting kids educated, you know, they have large populations, or getting competitive to keep the top students that are coming here, you know, going to Singapore, China, some of these, you know, Hong Kong, et cetera. So there's some very interesting factors at play there that I think globally customers should consider in terms of how you cooperate and approach these things in around standardizing some of the approaches to how you do business and how you implement software.
Good point. Mark, got a question, I think.
Oh, thanks. So I think along the lines of what Mark Armstrong just mentioned about standardizing on processes, some of the discussion in the last couple of days and really, I guess, for a long time in higher ed is that we struggle to work together for our common interests. So student systems would be an area of certainly their strategic advantage in recruiting and retention, but I think it's probably safe to say that most of the traditional ERP system functionality, mission critical as it is, it's more of a core, more of a commodity, less where we're going to be competing with each other other than driving the cost down. Do you envision when you're planning, you wouldn't mind sharing maybe some thoughts about this? I mean, can you envision a scenario? And I know Gartner always puts percentages on things, which is helpful, but it might be a 10% or less scenario. But if you envision in the next 5 years that universities really rally together to start getting serious about common business practices and started to actually perhaps even use, with licensing, use ERP solutions across systems or across campuses, things that I don't think we've done before other than the community source area. Can you imagine what that scenario, is that something you even consider possible in a dramatic way? And if so, how would you envision responding to that?
Jerry, go ahead if you're ready.
I think it's certainly a scenario that is possible. And we see it actually more so occurring outside of the U.S., where sometimes there's more centralization in the system. But the technology can handle it. It's usually about the political leadership and the will to collaborate around it. For instance, we have a number of customers, again, not in the U.S. because it's highly decentralized here, but we have customers that operate K-12 solutions, higher education solutions, healthcare solutions, and government agency solutions all on the same platform. Because to your point, Mark, you know, really when you're talking about financial accounting, if the basics are there for the financial accounting, if the basics are there for payroll, how different really are you in that area? And the answer is really not so much. The technology can definitely handle it. We're now beginning to see some efforts to have those conversations because of some of the economic pressures. I've seen for the first time in my career, not only universities that I think have long time sort of implemented shared services within a multi-campus system, but now there are some conversations about could we possibly do it across boundaries, in a region, for instance, and a single university offer it to several smaller colleges. We're just seeing this now occurring here in the U.S. also in local government. Now, typically a city and a county in the same region never would have spoken to each other. They have political issues with each other. But we're seeing the political leadership and the will begin to bring those things together. And I think we're seeing some of that occur at state levels. So the short answer is technology can absolutely handle it. We are seeing political leaders willing to have those discussions with all the financial pressures that they face today. And to your last question, how much within the next 5 years might we see here in the U.S. With people moving to that kind of... I really honestly think we're going to see first what I said earlier. We're going to see people moving into some kind of a cloud or a hybrid cloud environment first and testing out that environment, and then I think that will provide the platform maybe to have this conversation further.
Most of the benefit that comes from... as you speak to institutions that have been involved in community source projects, and this may be Kuali, it may be Sakai, I don't know the Moodle community as well, but I can't imagine that it's dramatically different. That there is a benefit that comes from the software itself, but that a lot of the real benefit that comes from engaging in these kind of collaborative efforts are that, I love the idea that we are that we come together and create action just through sharing ideas. My experience is that most of the time that we're trying to drive change through collaboration, it really does have to center around some project that is more concrete. And so a lot of the benefit that the Kuali Financial System institutions have seen is in trying to define the requirements for a financial system. In coming together as a community around those requirements, it naturally led to a greater commonality in business practices because there was a sharing in business processes to define the system that made people ask the right questions to really understand how that needed to come together. You see kind of a similar process quite often at the other end of the spectrum in the learning management system community source projects where there is greater creativity because as institutions understand what others are doing, there's an ability to kind of leapfrog in some of the creative teaching and learning practices and assessment practices as well. And so, I think that I actually have greater confidence in our ability to align around, to use our systems as the driver to create those kind of that kind of collaboration that leads towards action and greater commonality in business practices than to take the technology out of the discussion and find a way to bring business practice, align around business processes and business practices independent of that. I think the more we can, in so many cases, the technology becomes really the backdrop for the change that we're trying to create. And I think that's very much the case in defining functional requirements that drive a lot of the community source systems. And it creates alignment in business processes across institutions because of that kind of sharing, actionable sharing, instead of the kind of what do you do kind of soft sharing that we love.
We've noticed a trend in Gartner, in our speaking with CIOs all over the world, that as the state, and I say that with a small s, not just U.S. states, state-sponsored systems, if they haven't already developed, in effect, common processes so that they can run
common systems. They are being forced politically into that. And I'm sure that the people on this table can name the three or four states in the U.S. that are doing that dramatically. There are entire state systems with dozens of institutions running centrally with their ERP, you know, or centrally with their LMS. And, you know, they are from large research institutions down to smaller institutions. So, you know, it certainly can be done, and it can be done in a consortium effort, too, if we're finding that in some areas they're independent schools that are not in a state system are starting to collaborate on certain things, which has had some very interesting concepts. The Washington State, as much as I hate to give them any credit, given that I'm a Husky, Washington State, you know, the Cougars at the other end of the state, you know, have done some great collaboration with Eastern Washington. The government isn't pushing, but they've gotten together. So some of that is beginning to start, and it's very heartening. Any other questions now? Okay, I'd like to ask one more. We were talking about the big change in the demographics. And the fact that the student body in the United States, the traditional 18 to 20-year-old, you know, the population is flat. So I'd like to ask the panelists very quickly, just with a kind of a quick answer, what do they see as the biggest difference between the bricks and mortar and the online kind of app of users of their systems? You know, what is the biggest kind of differential? What is the, you know, the biggest change they see as more things move from as more systems, whether it's, you know, a college system that's opening something in the Dubai, or whether it's a traditional bricks and mortar school that's going more into online, what do they see the biggest difference in the use of their systems for that? So, you want to start, Mark?
Sure. I should say that I spent the last 6 years in the e-learning side of higher ed working for a lecture capture company. So I'm very familiar with the notion of putting a course online and what that does in terms of driving changes on campus. I think from an ERP point of view, to start, you have to have the flexibility to recognize many different types of students. I mean, DataTel was one of the first products to have sort of date-based enrollment, right? Back when community college went to open enrollment, that drives a lot of how your systems work and a lot of the workflows. You've got to have a flexible enough system to recognize the many different models that students might consume the product, whether it's traditional student going to a sort of a cloistered campus, whether it's a non-traditional, if you will, community college student who might be of any age, whether it's somebody taking hybrid courses with online courses, concurrent enrollment, dual enrollment. All these things are happening, and they really require fundamentally flexible ways to let people interact with the system, so you've got to have that as a baseline. Beyond that piece, I think it really is more a function of how the learning is happening. So I think the learning and the students who are used to online, just-in-time, real-time, the modern student, if you will, they expect to get things right now. It should all be instantaneous. It's all self-service model. They're happy to do the work for you. Let them have access to a screen and type in the information. Go find information. Your systems need to be much more student-centered, much more real-time consumption-centered, whether it's the registration process, looking for bills to pay, collaborating with other students. You have to either support that through collaboration with other products, or you need to build that into your own approach. But those students are just fundamentally different than even when I went to college. I went to the University of Minnesota, back when everything was go to one hall and stand in line for 4 hours and hope the green books you've got have the right courses in them. Everything is real time. I mean, look to your 10, 11, 12-year-olds. They are probably a better proxy for today's student than anybody else. Look at the way they gather information, look at the way they consume information, what they expect to be available to them right now. That is really the model that needs to drive the interaction with the system, and the learning is just fundamentally different. Lots of ways to do it. You can sort of consume at your own pace. You need to support all of those modes, both business-wise and learning-wise.
Dave,
yeah. Bad? What's that?
Is it something to add?
I think it goes to having this flexible learning models is absolutely the key. Just-in-time information, as Mark mentioned, is absolutely the key. And I mean, I think when you think about those 10-year-olds, to your point, I mean, how many of them are going to be using portals in the future? They might only know mobile devices, right? And how many of them go onto those mobile devices without immediately checking Facebook or social networking? And how do those social media sites drive what they register for, what books they buy, what professors they look for, what schools they choose? Those are all issues that, I mean, we are just now bringing into ERP. I mean, social media especially, I think, is a focus. And I came here just a few hours ago, so I apologize. But, I mean, I would expect that a lot of discussion to be happening around social media and how colleges and universities can utilize that information to drive a better student experience. It's all going to, at least at this point, that personal touch. The student has the phone in their hand. Those bits and bytes that maybe seemed impersonal, the student billet they didn't care about before, all of a sudden it's in their hand. They're touching it. It feels more personal to them. How do you enhance that experience? And I think that's going to be driving a lot of how we address students and how we serve those students better in the future.
And Ron, I would add from our perspective as well, we do have a lot of international universities. Globalization capabilities, when you're competing for students from China, India, from some of the high growth areas, globalization capabilities like language support, like currency support, those kinds of capabilities, in addition to what Mark said about a real flexible ability to handle different types of academic calendars, models, course structures, grading structures, et cetera, we see those as becoming more predominant kinds of capabilities that are utilized within our solutions. Especially when the mission is to collaborate more, to open campuses overseas, to go more into the online demand, to deliver online content. It is a consumer-oriented kind of a mindset, and you must be able to deliver to that kind of a mindset.
Yeah, and I think, one way to think about it is talent and method will start to supersede institution. Why wouldn't a student want to take an engineering lecture from an MIT mm-hmm. professor? And I think we'll start to reach a time when the professors and their content and their courses are going to be packaged, promoted, not totally dissimilar to how the entertainment industry does it. And in terms of the method, if you're a single unwed mother with limited time frame and you need to get educated, you need something local, you need it convenient from a time standpoint, and you want an entity that understands that, that looks at those parameters and says, fine, we're going to schedule the, whatever in-person component is out in a suburb, in a strip mall, whatever it takes to enable you to get that education where that growth really is. And I think as you sort of back into what does that mean from on the ERP side, it just keeps coming back to interoperability, because as this sort of consortiums either you control or frankly lose control of start to spread, the expectation is I want to be able to take a class not at any one of these 10 institutions but any one of these 500 institutions. But at the end of the term, I expect to get one bill and one transcript. So you guys better figure that out on the background or I'll go somewhere else. And so we as the software and infrastructure providers need to make sure that is seamless and that is in place and everything that goes around that is there, because that's what the industry is demanding.
Mark, I think we're almost out of time. You want to add something else before we close out here?
Yes, thanks, Ron. Maybe one last question. I wondered if the panelists could give us as IT leaders in higher education some perhaps parting advice as far as what can we do to more effectively use your solutions and services.
Sherry, you want to start? We'll go this way.
Well, I think one thing that we see a lot is, and I think someone mentioned it earlier, a lot of you have a lot of product, but you haven't necessarily utilized everything that you have. So I think there's unlocked value maybe in a lot of what you already have on campus. And when we talk about return on investment and you're looking at your strategies going forward, clearly you want to leverage investments that you've made already. That's one place to look. Clearly you want to see how you can bring some of these new capabilities into your strategy when you're looking at 10, 15 years. So I would encourage you to do an inventory of what you already have, capabilities you have that maybe you're still on the shelf that you haven't utilized, because often you'll find some surprising capabilities. You may have a business problem you didn't think you had a solution for, and you actually have it in some of these large suites that you already have on campus. And then the other thing that I would say is, you know, as you're looking at the next 10, 15-year strategy for your institution, I think all of us are very happy to be engaged, to come out, to share with you sort of what we're doing, where we're taking our strategy as we've started to share that discussion today. I really do believe that we're in a transformative time. As you know, many of us went from mainframe to client-server to relational to web. We're in another one of those transformational times, I think, that will play out over the next 5 to 10 years in the higher education industry. And I think now is a really excellent time to be thinking about these kinds of things.
Two things come to mind. One is sort of the standard, and that is continue the collaboration. But, and in fact, in some ways, deepen the collaboration. I think they're open or community source and vendor-supplied products, as well as what you all do, the innovation that is the basis, frankly, for why the education system even exists, we can optimize that better. So there are things that, there's lots of things that nobody sitting on this stage, with the possible exception of Kuali, is going to build. It doesn't make economic sense, it's too specialized, but it's still a very high value to higher education or segments of higher education. We can enable that, but we need to be able to sit down and sort of map through those things. And I think those are going from what were nice to have and interesting to, you know, witness what happened with learning management systems. A lot of those, or a small number at least, morph into mission critical applications. And I think we need to work on those things together. The other component I would say is not related to software, at least directly, and what we're struggling with is there's kind of a bifurcation between a lot of your operational folks and you all, you the thought leaders on campus, where they're, you know, we're engaged in the 18 or 20 product advisory groups and the sort of tactical month in and month out process, and they're increasingly coming to us saying, we don't know where things are going. It, you know, the guidance we get is, do more with less, and I'll be back in 2 weeks. And I think that is something that is important and becoming critical, because they don't know where to go. They, you know, a lot of it. I wasn't paid to figure out how to keep doing this with half the IT budget. You know, I had much different expectations when I got hired on 10, 15, 20 years ago, and that gap I see is lurking out there in a lot of your institutions. There needs to be sort of a refresh and a reconnection in some cases. And I think there's been some discussions, be it in the guise of project management or some of the other things that happened here. But I'm very worried about that, and it makes it very difficult for us as a vendor to engage as productively as we need to through this next very challenging era. So resolve that, at least check, and if it's there, resolve that disconnect and focus on that. Because without that, it doesn't, you know, in essence, it doesn't necessarily matter what products we deliver. If you don't have the talent or the understanding to effectively deploy them, then, you know, we're not going anywhere.
Okay. So I live in Philadelphia in a house under 2,000 square feet with twins, four-year-old twins. Right? So I have a very formalized rule in the house, which is if a toy comes in, a toy goes out. All right? Because we don't have the space, we don't have the capacity to have hundreds and hundreds of toys. And so I have a similar philosophy when I talk with customers, which is revitalize and retire. We've already talked about the revitalization, which is look at what you have on the shelf, figure out what you can pull into your environment, what maybe is going to help smooth out those business processes, and then look at what mods you can retire. I think too often you get excited about the, you know, the shiny coin that's out there and you want the next best thing, but meanwhile, your maintenance of those components grows and grows and grows, and sometimes there's just not room for it. We don't all have $100 million budgets. So I think it's important to look at how we as vendors can help you retire some of those modifications, those things that are increasing your total cost of ownership. So revitalize and retire, I think, is a really important kind of takeaway.
A good Midwestern minute to all like that.
You like that?
and I'll piggyback a bit on Mark's comments. I think that the most important thing that we don't get access to is end-user feedback. So I would encourage you to be more of a politician, more of a community relations specialist, spend more time really making sure that you're in touch with your end users or talking their language, and help us understand that. Help us help you position things the right way with the right language. Don't treat us always as somebody you need to hold off, the sort of barbarians coming to sell you more product. You know, bring us into the fold and help us understand what your admissions folks really want. Help us understand what the folks in finance really want and are really frustrated by. Oftentimes the pieces get lost in the middle, the lost in the translation, so we don't do as good a job as we can to tailor the right pieces next or focus on the right fixes, the right enhancements. Help us be a better communicator, more of a partner, hold our feet to the fire, you know, negotiate us, all those things you need to do, but try to get us better educated on your processes, the things that you deal with, the politics internally. Help us give you ROI documents and not just sales sheets. Bring us into the fold so we can be a better partner and help you really accomplish something versus keeping us a bit at arm's distance. We know that we have a lot to do to earn that, but I would encourage that sort of mindset because that seems to be where we get the best end product.
So I think across the course of the panel, we've had a lot of discussion about, and through the last 2 days, a lot of discussion about the benefits of collaboration, of actually engaging with each other in a more community-based approach. And I feel as though we are poised in a position that we have not been here before, where the opportunity that we have in higher education to come together around solving our collective problems is very different than it's been before. I mean, you listen to the commonality across what we're all trying to accomplish, and it is in support of your goals. And, you know, in the past, there have been greater divisions between the vendor communities. There have been greater divisions. You know, there was a real need when Community Source was first coming together in higher education for it to be somewhat dogmatic. And, you know, in order to drive the kind of change it needed to drive to make this a sustainable, realistic approach. And we are past that. And there's an incredible degree of pragmatism in the Community Source organizations right now around how can we just better solve the problems that are in front of us? How can we better collectively use our resources? And my plea would be, you know, I think that Qali fills an important place in that. But whether it is Qali or whether that needs to be some broader coming together under a different name or community, that the ability to come together and not have the best of the thinking of Banner institutions and the best of the thinking of DataTel institutions, but to be able to elevate that, to use new methodologies and new collaboration processes to say where we have gaps in needs, that, as Mark mentioned, are niche needs. How do we come together to solve those problems? Where we have issues like what is the right approach to mobile that we don't individually know that we need to collectively determine. More importantly, how does the mass of data we have about what is going on around learning actually improve learning? We have no idea. And I think those are the kinds of problems that if we can elevate the conversation and collaborate better across, you know, not within our vendor communities, but across higher education and bringing the collective resources of the vendor communities together, we have a much greater potential and ability to solve the really critical problems that we need to solve. I mean, in the online learning environment, I was at a meeting last week where an institution made one change. They moved from a purchased textbook for an online course from a publisher to an open textbook that the students could access for free online and would pay about a quarter of the cost for a printed copy. They used a Flat World Knowledge textbook. 17% increase in retention in the online course by taking the cost of the textbook out as an obstacle to student success. We all need to be sharing these experiences because there's a lot at stake. And that would be my plea, is to find a way, whether it is through the Qali community or whether it is coming together in an elevated discussion in some way, to have our collaboration across all of the vendor platforms be stronger.
Thank you very much for a great session.
Thank you.
Mark Askren, Clara Jelenkova, Kevin Maroney, David Swartz, and Brad Wheeler. This podcast is sponsored by Moran Technology Consulting, providing management and IT consulting services to higher education institutions around the world. MoranTechnology.com. I'm Jerry Bain for EDUCAUSE. Thanks for listening.